Morning. Changing our customary posture in relation to conflict, which is turning away, changing that to turning toward, stepping in, is a wondrous spiritual shift. And that's what we'll be talking about today. We'll be talking about the third side, or a way of engaging when we're not actually involved in the conflict ourselves directly. Okay? So it's kind of a fun way to think about our place in the world. It is possible for conflict to be something of interest. It's possible for it to be something that has immense creative possibilities and an outcome we might have never imagined without the conflict. So we're going to think together about listening carefully, asking very focused questions, going up to the balcony, and holding as our highest intention the good of each and the good of all. So it's that transforming conflict that isn't mysterious or special. It's just ordinary people thinking about it in a fresh and positive way. So I'm glad to be with you and Michael this morning thinking about this together.
Good morning. I am Michael Nelson, the minister here at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan. Whether your head swarms with chaos or fills with the nectar of peace, you are welcome here. Whether you diffuse an argument with laughter or using detached curiosity, what's that? Detached curiosity, you are welcome here to practice peacemaking. Whoever you are and whomever you love, you are welcome here to bring peace to each and every heart that beats in this world. May we do this individually and together. Welcome. I extend a warm welcome to our visitors and guests and hope that you feel comfortable and inspired by what we have to share and offer. And please, if you feel comfortable and thirsty and a little bit hungry, stay afterwards for a great conversation. And if you have any interest in learning about what it means to be a member of this progressive community, please talk to me. Our membership chair is unreachable, but if anybody knows how to reach her on a boat going around New Zealand, let me know. That is Shirley Holbrook. But you can also talk to our wonderful president, Ann Cowan. Ann, would you raise your hand? And we'll be glad to talk to you or help you in any way we can. Oh, I did lose the... Thank you. Please, take a moment to enter into this place where peace seeks and tries to find a home. Release what chaos holds you too tightly. Enter the place where prophecy and vision expand and focus to bring light. To bring light into your heart and mind so that clarity and justice and goodwill lives in this place and outside this place. Now is the time in our order of service when we share the announcements which give structure and vitality to our community life. You'll find them in the insert and on the other side of our this morning's order of service. In addition, if you have lost your name tag or put it in a bag that you won't find for 3 years, please speak with Annelle Forrester and she'll be glad to get you another one. Annelle is over there. She will be ordering name tags for new members on February 1st, so this is your chance to get a name tag if you've lost one or would like one, or if you've become a member. So thank you for that, Annelle.
Tag team. Our theology for today can be enacted physically. Now, everybody doesn't enjoy this, so if you don't enjoy it, please just stay seated. But your opportunity will be to stand up and find someone you didn't come with and practice a four-act embrace. This was developed by Miroslav Volf. He is a theologian who focuses on religion and identity and the other. So he believes, and I think it's charming, that we can use an embrace to enact a way of being together. So if you'd like to participate, I'll walk you through the embrace, and you can take each part one act at a time. If you'd like to participate, please stand and find someone that you are comfortable hugging. Okay. Okay, there are four acts. There are four acts in the drama. The four acts will be open the arms in invitation, wait for the other, close the arms, and open again. Okay, so let's do these together with care and meaning. Open your arms to your partner in invitation. We recognize each other. We create a space in which to move out of ourselves and into welcoming connection. Wait. Wait with open arms. That shows respect for the other. It recognizes that the other has integrity and choice. It shows that there must be mutuality for this to work. Close the arms. Both sets closing is required. It requires a soft touch. Each person's identity is preserved. Open the arms, because we're separate people who need to get about our separate lives. We're different than each other. And once we know each other better, we may choose to hug again. If you want to practice with someone else, this would be the time.
Out really well. Let us now sing hymn number one, Nothing, May Nothing Evil Cross This Door. If you feel like standing, please do so and sing with full voice. If you have a personal joy or concern that brings depth and added dimension to your life, whether it be one that helps you to grieve fully or helps you to laugh out loud, will you please, if you feel comfortable doing so, share those now, those personal joys and concerns. Is there anybody who would like to do so?
Supreme Boker, my nephew just the other day had surgery on his eyes, and he came out through the surgery all good, and all he had to do is put antibiotic ointment on his eyes twice a day. But now instead of being able to, if he has a four-letter word, he could only see the leftmost and rightmost letter. Now he can see the whole word.
All right.
So he's doing good.
Hi, Sam Zeller. Corey and my son Owen had his ears operated on, just tubes to put in for ear infections, but he was really brave, and I was extremely proud of him, so that's a joy. Yes.
We have a microphone coming your way.
I'm so thankful that we're able to visit our granddaughter, Amy Stormo. She's a visitor here, a member to be, and we are being housed at Barbara and Jim's, and we're just having a great weekend. Thank you.
Great. Welcome. So for all those, for the joy expressed, let us keep those in our minds and hearts as we move through the week, but let's also be mindful of all the concerns and all those things that bring meaning to our life that we don't share with others. So let us be mindful. Let us be compassionate. Thank you.
Hello, will all the children please come up? While they're coming forward, I'm going to use this opportunity. This bracelet was found in the parking lot last Sunday. Does this look familiar to... Yay! We have a winner. Oh, you're welcome. Okay. So in our K through second grade and third through sixth grade classrooms, they've been spending the last couple of weeks learning about the Judeo-Christian roots of Unitarian Universalism through Bible stories. And the one that they've done recently is Cain and Abel. And since this is a week about conflict resolution, I thought it would be a good time for us to reimagine the conclusion of the Cain and Abel story. But in case the adults don't know the story, I was hoping that maybe I could have three volunteers to act it out as I tell the story. Leah, thank you. Kaya, thank you. I need one more. Great. Rose, thank you. Okay. Are you gonna... Okay, who would like to play God? Rose? Yeah? Okay. She doesn't need to know it because I'm going to tell it. She'll just do hand motions. Rose, will you come and stand up here? Okay. God. Kaya, do you want to be Cain or Abel? Maybe Cain. I think it's great. Okay, come on up. All right. Leah, you're going to be Abel. You don't want that role. I know. Who does? Nobody. But you know what? He's not going to die in this version, so it's going to be great. Okay? All right. Okay. Fantastic. Now, in the story, so actually, Cain and Abel, can you come down here? Because God is going to stand a little higher than you. Okay. Let's just farm and tend to our sheep. Will you be a sheep, Owen? Okay, great. All right, so just pretend like you're farming and tending to your sheep, okay? So you're going to farm. Just like hoe. Pretend to hoe. That looks good, too. That looks good, too. Okay, Leah, maybe you can be like, come on, sheep. No. Okay. All right. I'll do it for you. Sheep. Hi, sheep. Look at all your sheep, okay? Oh, good, we have a sheep right here. Perfect. Okay, now you, Kaya, are going to offer all of your vegetables to God. Can you just turn around and pretend to offer vegetables to God? I know, it doesn't end well for you. Well, you actually win in the sort of, but it's, okay. All right. And Abel, now you are going to present your sheep to God. Look at your bountiful sheep. Wow. God, can you give Abel a huge hug? Because, man, those sheep are beautiful. Let's give Abel a big hug. Cain, we're really disappointed with your vegetables. No hug for you. Now, this might make Kaya really upset, right? Well, you don't get a hug. Bummer. Now, in the story in the Bible, what happens? Who can tell us? Lily?
Cain kills Abel.
Yeah, Cain, in the story, you kill Abel. That's not really the ending we would like to see today on a day when we're talking about conflict resolution. So who thinks there might be a different way this story could have ended? Nick? Oh, yeah, he's a sheep. He can't talk. What was I thinking? How else could this have been resolved without death? Not a peaceful solution. Yes.
She could say, good job, Abel.
She could have said, good job, Abel. Now, could God have done anything differently? Hard to know. What do you think?
God could have given... Cain a hug?
God could have given Cain a hug. One of the things that we talked about in the third through sixth grade classroom is what we called present face, or acting like you like it, even if you don't really like it. Showing appreciation, right? Right? So maybe God could have mediated and said, great vegetables, Cain, Also good are the sheep, right? And we also came up with the solution that Abel could have maybe said, your vegetables are really good, Cain. And Cain could have said, your sheep are really good. Do you think we needed a mediator to come in and help this out? What is a mediator? Good question, Ronan. Does anybody know what a mediator is? Yeah.
It's a rock in space.
Yes, meteor, yes. A mediator is a third party who comes in and helps solve conflicts. So today, that's going to be the sheep. So sheep, can you come in and help solve the conflict? What can you do? Sheep. Okay, Jake?
My toys in my bedroom keep them clean.
Good point. Good point. Okay, one of the things that we could do, sheep, is maybe help Cain and Abel work it out, right? So there are lots of different ways we can solve conflicts, and I think we've come up with some good solutions today. Cain and Abel could have dealt with it differently by talking it out, and God actually could have also helped it out. And God could have also helped it out by maybe acting as a mediator. And we learned a new word today as well. Okay. Go now.
May peace be a product of our goodwill and works. May there be peace between each of us that celebrates our differences. May we give so that peace may be shared by all, and everyone who is wounded may be healed. Let us give. When spider webs unite, they can halt a lion. Well, I thought I should know a little bit more about where this phrase came from, and so I Googled it like everyone else who has a computer does nowadays. And guess what? The first two hits were the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan. So I guess I know more than the rest of the Google world, which isn't true. But anyway, it's an Ethiopian proverb, and I guess it comes out of some sense that the lion, being the king of the jungle with the biggest fangs and the ability to just snap someone's neck and just carry them off up into a tree or to their pride, is something very real. And we all know what that feels like in our lives when something happens where we feel like we're just grabbed by the neck, not even guessing it's going to happen, and just shook. So the idea of a spider web, you know, which is something we walk through, and they, oh, get out of the way, is something you step on, you swat, or if you're like me, you kind of lift it up and try to put it outdoors. I do kill flies, so I'm not like the perfect peacemaker, but spiders, I think, are really pretty good. I mean, I don't want them in my bed, right? But when the idea of weaving all these connections, and the connections coming from the goodwill of people who want to halt that surprise attack that breaks the neck, that kills and just takes away life, that these connections are so strong that they can stop that kind of disaster. When Thea and I decided to explore the third side, I did not know it would take me deep into what I don't know, or perhaps better put, still have so much work to do to understand and practice breath by breath. So Thea has given her life in many ways to trying to figure out what it means to be a proactive peacemaker. And so when she said the third side, I said, let's do that. So Thea, what is it about the third side that compels you?
Well, I like to think of myself as democratic. Democracy is something that motivates me. And the third side approach to peacemaking means that everyone can do something. Everyone has something to do. It also points out that we can prevent conflict when we're not afraid of it. So the approach of stepping in and assuming that conflict can be positively transforming and can increase understanding and come up with some outcome that would have never happened otherwise, that positive possibility is a different way of thinking about conflict, because usually we just tie hurt and violence with conflict, and what we want to do is run away and escape it. So that's what I find compelling about it.
It is compelling, because wouldn't we all like to be able to step in without a lot of anxiety to help out in a situation where things are just going south or west or whatever direction, but it's not a good direction wherever it's going, right? Wouldn't it be nice to be able to be one of those people that could do that with calm and dignity and authenticity? Well, I think that this is like everything else. It's so easy to say in your mind, oh, yes, yes, this is what I want. This is who I am. This is what I believe. So therefore, this is how I am in the world. Well, just the other day, I was at the fitness center, which I go to become a little less, so I could actually become a navel gazer. I think navel gazing is a good sport. It's a good activity. It's a good spiritual practice. But anyway, I can't do it very well without doing this, which makes it hard to breathe. So anyway, I'm at the gym trying to become a good navel gazer. And I'm on the elliptical machine going, and I always turn Fox News off and put on MSNBC, which everyone's going, what are you doing? I said, there are three TVs here. I'm going to watch this one. And so anyway, there's this wonderful woman who works the front desk, and I'm on the elliptical machine watching Newt Gingrich, and I'm watching Mitt Romney, and I'm watching all that stuff going on all over. And here comes a little boy. He can't be older than three. He's walking, and his mom is walking with purpose. She's got her purse slung over her shoulder, and she's going to that door real quick. And there's this little guy. He's just walking. Oh, what's down there? He stops, and his mother's going, okay, come on, come on. So he walks a few steps, and then he looks in the window, and he sees all these people, and he goes, come on, come on. So he walks a little further, and then he gets by the door, and there's where all the recycling is. Yes, this fitness center recycles. Yes, great. And he is just transfixed with these boxes. And his mother's going, come on, come on, come on. She's got an agenda. She's in a hurry. She's got to get someplace else in 10 minutes. And so she goes up to the front desk to inquire about what it would be like to be a member here. What does it cost? What are the machines? What are all the stuff that you can do? And the woman who runs the front desk is very nice and very polite. And she looks down at the little boy, and she goes, do you have a girlfriend? 3 years old. 3 years old. And he goes, yes, I do. And I'm thinking, how at that age already, or even before, this kid is being told who to be via a very sincere and warm question. But this little kid may grow up to be gay. So the message that it's not okay to be gay is being transmitted via that kind of communication that we just accept as normal. No one probably but me would have seen except you guys, would have seen something wrong with that exchange. Because it made me think back to when I was that age. And I can remember learning how to behave so that I would not be the target, so that my father would look at me. This shame goes very deep. And it takes some kind of awareness that's about what we're talking about. So the question I have for you, Thea, about this, how do you foster genuine dialogue? In that situation, I felt helpless, other than maybe I could use it on Sunday morning.
What did you want to say? What did you want to say?
Well, I want to say, God damn it, quit it. But of course, I wouldn't say that. I mean, but that was what was going through me, because I don't assume that this kid is gay or straight or anything. He's just a little kid, right? But I wanted to say, don't do that. Please, don't do that. I don't think you understand the implications of what you're doing and the long-term impact it can have on a child's life. Maybe not this kid, but another kid. And it also reinforces, if he does turn out to be a straight person who just loves girls, that that's the way to be. It reinforces that that's the standard. So how could I don't think there was a place for that dialogue there, but maybe it is in the community.
I think what you just said, a little bit shorter, would have been perfect.
I didn't have the guts.
One of the things we do in religious community, I think, is practice. And so if we can feel safe and have the courage to practice in our religious community being that authentic, then when the opportunity comes in the community, maybe the courage would be there.
Well, that's a nice idea, I think, and it's one that I aspire to, but the reality is, I believe, that just to be in that gym as a gay man is a test. I'm not the only gay person there, I'm sure, but, you know, I come in with my little green shoe bag with my stuff, and people look at me. So I'm already feeling ostracized. I don't feel necessarily welcome there. It's not that they're unwelcoming, but I feel like my job is just to stay safe and to observe, and where I can, in little ways, perhaps open up the environment. But I don't feel like I could go up to that woman and say that. So it's a tough one, I think. And I think it's a real question that we all face. So okay. That was a hard one. Sorry, Thea. So that would lead to, there's a number of ways that the third side provides, a number of skill sets that you can use in everyday life. You can be the provider, enabling people to meet their needs, the teacher, giving people skills to handle conflict, the bridge builder, the arbiter, the mediator, the equalizer, and here's one that I love, the healer. Repairing injured relationships. So, in your own life, have you used this teaching or this point of third side understanding as a tool, as something that can help you figure out how to be at peace?
Probably like everybody, I've used it in my family, and I think, I hope what you can do is think back about how you've used it in your family and maybe have some new names. I'm 4 and 6 years older than my first two brothers, and so I was doing a lot of babysitting when I was an early teenager. And my brothers are very physical. In fact, they beat each other up at the least provocation. And so my job, my main job as the babysitter, was to keep them from killing each other or using whatever they had in their hands as weapons. And I learned pretty young that it was better to stop the fight sooner rather than later. So that's a little bit of peacemaking that I got from that opportunity to practice. I also had some bargaining chips because they didn't want me to cry and they didn't want me to tell our parents. So I could threaten those things and that would help. But that's a third side peacemaking role. I wasn't in the conflict. I wanted the conflict that there was to stop. And I used whatever I could, whatever I had at that time available to me, to at least lower the level of conflict, to take the weapons out of their hands, whatever they were. So that's one thing. And I think also in our families, especially our extended families, there are probably opportunities to be a witness when there's conflict. My nephew married a woman that his mother really didn't like, and when the baby was born, he called me from the hospital and he said, "My mother refuses to come here. What am I going to do? How could she not come here?" And so I was about 40 miles away and I went to the hospital and I was the witness for them. I took the pictures of the three of them, and now that baby is about 5 and she's totally loved by her grandmother, and everything's fine. But you know how those things go in families. And I think holding the image of a whole, or of the vision maybe of a whole family, and keeping that present really makes a difference. Just keeping on imagining that it's possible to have a whole family. And then some of the steps will just be obvious. You'll know what to do if you have that image. I just saw The Descendants, that new George Clooney movie. Oh my gosh. But he had this great line in there that he said, "I think my family is an archipelago, each of us a separate island, vaguely connected." And I thought, what a good image, that there is some connection, but also being conscious of that that distance between us that requires constant attentiveness. So I think we have the opportunities to practice in our immediate nuclear families, and certainly in our extended families.
So to move a little bit further into the healer, the notion of healing, we all have in our lives been the cause or the participant or the recipient of an injured relationship where something has broken. And it just hasn't worked. And to the extent that these wounds run deep, and even if you're not aware of them, they're probably there somewhere. Even if a conflict appears resolved after a process of mediation or talking or voting, however it's handled, depending if it's a small situation, a medium-sized situation, or a national or international situation, the wounds may remain, and with them the danger that the conflict could reoccur. A conflict cannot be considered fully resolved until the injured relationships have begun to heal. Now, I think this is probably an area that makes most of us, and myself included, uncomfortable. You know, owning up to things that I've done and have said, and I haven't said, like in the 12-step program, "I'm sorry." So it's a practice of forgiveness, a practice of practicing this detached curiosity, standing back and looking at, well, instead of pointing, saying, how did I help perpetuate or precipitate or to deepen this conflict? So there's many angles to approach this with, but if we don't attend at least as best we can to those wounds, they're like an anchor, or they're like a time bomb, or they're like one of those, what are those things that are buried in the sand, landmines. You could step on it, and it could just blow up without any kind of, like, whoa, I didn't see that coming, right? So it's not like one should dwell on them, but to totally ignore them probably is a practice in creating the potential for conflict to arise. Would you agree with that, Thea? Or do you have a different take on it?
The place I have a little different take is blaming yourself. You know, we have that reading in our hymnal, I forgive myself and others and begin again in love. And that I use that as a mantra sometimes, because if we're still blaming ourselves for a mistake that we made, it's also hard to move on. So I think we need to forgive ourselves and forgive the other at the same rate.
Yeah.
And begin again where we are at the present time. If the other person hasn't done that, you know, I don't know that there's too much to do about that. But we can forgive ourselves and them, and we can act from that place. I had a brush with breast cancer some years ago, and instead of inviting my family to help me, I invited friends. And I could hear that that was very hurtful to my family members. So when I was recovered, or in recovering time, I invited everybody out to the ranch that I was living at to celebrate Thanksgiving. And so we were celebrating, you know, my recovery and Thanksgiving, and that we were a whole family, and that it wasn't my intention to hurt them by not having them there. I thought I would do better if I had friends with me. But we didn't even go there. We went to the place of, look, we're all a family, and we're all here celebrating Thanksgiving together. So I think one can go back too much.
Yes, yes, absolutely. That's what I mean for myself. Don't dwell on it. Don't dig the hole deeper. Find a way out of that hole. And sometimes it takes repeated efforts. So we kind of looked at a micro, a mid-level, and then maybe I'm interested also in the macro level at which this kind of third side approach can work. And it made me think of the Oklahoma Peace Festival, which we'll be celebrating its 25th year in the fall, November of this year. And I was the person who said, let's do a peace festival, when I worked as a minister down there in the 80s. And I worked with the Benedictine Sisters and a group of other people in the community who saw themselves as really dedicated and devoted to peacemaking. Well, great idea, everyone on board. We have our first meeting, and the subject of money comes up, right? How are we gonna do this? And my idea came down to this. If we're gonna do it, let's do it in a way that it's self-sustaining, so that it will be able to repeat itself without reinventing that fundraising stuff every year. We had some seed money from the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee, which was very helpful, but on the board there were a couple of people, real strong advocates for peace and justice, who thought money was just evil. Just evil. And I thought, whoa, but how are we going to rent the hall if we don't have money? How are we going to get this lesbian comedian to come and do some fun stuff if we don't have some money? So we went round and round, and finally we came up with a way that was self-sustaining, and now more than 30,000 people have come to this event. But it took some real kind of negotiating, listening to the difference, but allowing, and this is the important part of it, the vision to be the director. The vision to be the thing that says, we've got to do this. We've got to figure out a way to accomplish the vision. And the vision was to empower all the groups in Oklahoma City and the surrounding area that worked for peace and justice, because the time I was there, there were more teenage suicides and pregnancy rates in the nation than anywhere else. So there were serious, serious problems. And I thought a peace festival where there's fun, there's booths. Anyway, it's just worked fabulously well. It's just gotten bigger every year. I only worked it on the first year, so I can't take credit for the following years, but the vision of peacemaking. So,
I have an example from the Occupy movement. Last fall, the Occupy movement in New York City was developing its first declaration. You know, this is who we are and what we want. And I just read a firsthand description from Henna Ashraf. She's Asian, and she was standing around with other Asians, and they were listening to the first draft of the declaration. And they said, that's not right. It's not right that we don't have, what the phrase was, something, the phrase was, despite the divisions of, or no, no, the phrase was, formerly divided by race, cultural background, etc. So the Asians were listening to the leaders read, formerly divided by, and they said, no, no, that's not quite it. That's not historically accurate. That's too idealistic. And so they talked among themselves, and they said, despite the divisions of would be more real, despite the divisions of race and culture and ethnicity. So, you know, in the Occupy movement, they go, mic check, mic check. And so she did that and was called on, and she raised her point for the group, and they said, oh, this is the time for questions. This isn't the time for suggestions. So she felt really shut down. But then she did it again, and they said, now, is this an ethical concern that will disallow consensus? And she said, yes, it is. And so she raised their point again, and the General Assembly supported it, and it was in the phrase was changed to despite instead of glossing over. Then the Asians went with the leaders after the meeting and wanted to really talk with them and help them understand why they needed to make that change. And she said it was so hard because these were people we respected and they just didn't get it. They just didn't understand how people of color felt in this situation. And it was a hard conversation. But then she concludes by saying, you know what? We made our common dream more real by doing what we did, by having the courage to stand up for ourselves and then doing it again and then doing it again. So all of us left feeling like our purpose, our common purpose of being united was more addressed, more met through the dissent or the disagreement than it would have been if they just would have let that go by. So the conflict actually increased the understanding and certainly increased the vision of wholeness that they were all holding.
Great. One of the other areas is bridge builders, and I thought I'd give you an example of something that the third side has been able to accomplish. In Omaha, Nebraska, not too far in our neighborhood, right? A small group of African American fathers came together under the Mad Dads to walk the streets and reconnect with young people involved in drugs and violence. We just started talking with them, explains the co-founder. What would you like to see change around here? Good question. Open dialogue, open question. We listened to them. We got them engaged in expressing themselves so that they had a voice. Then we got into feelings. How do you feel about so-and-so? What about your father? Mad Dads has spread to 12 states across America with tangible results. As one government official explains, in 1990, there were 16 people killed in one single neighborhood, a four-block area. This year, there has been only one killing. Mad Dads taught us that ours was not a black or white community or problem, but a community problem. The only way to help a community is for the community to help itself, one house, one block at a time. Mad Dads. Bridge building. What do you think? You were talking about bridge building in your last thing, but your last comment. Are there other ways that you have seen that have happened, perhaps in your many years doing Unitarian Universalist ministry? Drawing a blank, sorry.
I hate it when he does this.
Well, I just, in case I won't have another chance to say this, I just want to say that you all here have a covenant of right relations that is just beautiful. I was just reading it again when I was out in the foyer, and part of it is, of course, I'm a little attached to it because I helped you, and Michael invited me to help you. But what it does is it enables you to be with each other, keeping that vision of wholeness, and then thinking, okay, I have the vision of wholeness, now what do I do? And then you can just go to that two-page document that helps you reflect and reminds you of a process to keep the conflicts that inevitably arise, keep them the right size, and keep the vision of the whole in mind the whole time. So it's I guess it's a bridge building, mm-hmm. in terms of being the bridge, maybe, letting the whole congregation be the bridge for the inevitable conflicts, and then assuming that positive understanding and more awareness, more unity can come.
Yeah. So this gets me to the point, and I think that was a legitimate, truly good example of bridge building, working across congregations, working together as progressive people to find ways to avoid more tension that is unhealthy. But the thing that I've come to realize, and Thea thinks I'm probably a little nuts, which is true, but is that the third side I see everywhere. And I see where it's missing in myself. I see where it's missing in certain situations. I see where it's missing in my family. I see where it's missing here and there. And I began to realize that it's vision. Going back to vision, something bigger than all that stuff that hopefully can pull you forward. And it becomes a spiritual practice to recognize, oh, here is where a bridge could be built. Here is a place where healing can take place. You may not take care of it all, but just that intent informs something inside the self that keeps you supple like a newborn babe, like the Tao Te Ching says. And don't we need to be supple in a world that wants to divide, in a world that wants to say good, bad, evil? No. There is a larger vision of love, a larger vision of community, a larger vision of possibility that we each can take responsibility for and learn how to practice in our own way, recognizing where it's hard, recognizing where, oh, that's an easy one, and just doing the good work. Thea?
Thank you. I thought I had a pretty global vision, but Michael's got me beat on this one. He's way global vision. I just came across this, and I thought you might enjoy it too. In Islam, there's a belief that God made us different so that we could come to understand each other and cultivate our characters through working through our differences. I find that charming, that God intentionally made us different so that we have the opportunity to practice.
So, we have some time for conversation. There's all kinds of ways you can enter into this conversation, but in what ways do you try to practice proactive peace building by being a third side, a bridge builder, a teacher, a mediator? Over here. Oh, got back there first. Sorry. Let Doug do this, Michael.
Do you mind if I make a comment about the gym experience that you had?
Sure.
My name is Joshua Long, my wife Jessica. You had made a comment that that you were unhappy with the way that the woman was interacting with the child. you felt like maybe things had been gone better. Is that right?
Or can you say that again?
Yes. You had made the comment that, I had the impression that you were kind of unhappy with the way that the woman had interacted with the child, and you felt unable to approach her about it.
Right.
And so I was going to maybe offer, a suggestion or just make a comment if that's all right.
Oh, that's fine. This is what this is about.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so in this context, we're talking in the gym, we're probably talking about maybe something that would be relevant to her would be body image, because males and females have different perspectives as far or have different experiences when it comes to body image, and that goes for the gay community as well. A gay man feels different from maybe a straight man. And I know this because I studied in college. So I think that there should be a sensitivity there in the context of body image, because there may be something important for the child to experience in the gym environment, because if that child grows up to believe that being big, for example, or being very muscular and masculine towards women, for example, like being seen by public as being masculine, then that could be unhealthy. Just say for like my perspective, maybe that if I would try to exercise too much, you know, to try to get big or something, it might be too much. I might not be have the right body shape or whatever to do that, and I could injure myself. I have, in fact, injured myself, and it could be a result of a body image issue that I have growing up, because I've always been smaller. I developed, you know, later than other people. But I think the way to approach this situation is to not maybe address the body image issue right away, but maybe try to establish something smaller with her. Maybe start small, like you had said that with the Peace Festival in Oklahoma, you had said that that when you talked with all the people, that you had talked about all the ideas and you had accomplished all these different things that you wanted to do with the Peace Conference, and then you came to the hard question, money. And that's, I think, the best way to approach conflicts, is to start with something small. And I know this because I studied conflict resolution in college too, but to start something small and then graduate to something more difficult.
Thank you.
Mike Bedella. Also, regarding your gym experience, I was sitting here reminded of an experience that I had, but I knew the person that I was dealing with fairly well, and it is in work in our office. I had made a comment about, or we were talking about the price of some item, and my coworker said that she Jewed them down. And that's one that just makes me cringe. I knew her well enough that I didn't even have to think about whether or not I should say something. I just blurted it right out of my mouth. And I said, "Do you know what religion I am?" And she doesn't. And she just looked at me, and deer in the headlights, and her eyes got real big, and she started bawling. Mm-hmm. And we talked about it later, and I said, "Well, you know, I'm not Jewish, but for all you knew, I was." So I think if you call people on stuff occasionally, and it's hard to always do that because you don't know a person sometimes as well, but in this case, I did. And, you know, we talked about it later, and she had never even really thought about it in terms of being derogatory in any way. It's just a common expression to her. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's the one that just makes me cringe when I hear it. I there should be others that do the same thing, but for some reason that particular one, I don't know why, I just cringe. And I hear it, we go yard sailing sometimes, and, you know, one time I heard a woman say it to a minister at a church yard sale, "Oh, I just love to Jew." And I'm thinking, for God's sakes, minister, say something to this woman. You know, and in that case, I didn't feel comfortable enough to just, right. I have actually had a yard sale once when the person having the sale used that term, said, no, thank you, I think I'll pass and go somewhere mm-hmm. else. So I think, you know, in some cases, go for it, you know, just blurt it out. Let that initial reaction go. And, you know, I heard you kind of soften it up at first, saying that this was a really nice woman who did this. Well, she's that nice. Maybe she is a nice person, and if you explain it to her, it might really make a difference. So, you know.
Good. We'll see. Yeah.
Well, I'm Laura Benella, and as it was interesting to hear you say that, I'm going to comment on the same thing. Out of all the things you had to say, this is the one that apparently struck a nerve. because I have the same thing, but kind of from a different perspective as the mother of a daughter. When people ask her if she has a boyfriend yet, of course there is the whole, you know, she might turn out to be a lesbian, which would be fine, but then the whole, you know, no, she does not have a boyfriend, she's 5 years old. You know, it just, it drives me crazy, exactly. Do not sexualize my five-year-old. And I've said that to people, you know, and I just very kindly say, you know, we really don't talk about whether or not she has a boyfriend because she's five, and so no, she doesn't. And I think that sometimes makes people think, you know, why would you say that to a three-year-old or a five-year-old? And, you know, I think just kindly mentioning it to somebody, you know, I'm not sure why you would ask that question to a five-year-old is what I say.
Mm-hmm.
And I say it nicely, yeah. But I think it does make them think.
Good.
And I think you can say that about a lot of things. I'm not sure why you would ask that question.
Yeah. Thank you. I think we have time for one more.
Well, I'll stretch this out. I thought you were going to go someplace entirely different with this, your observation. My first observation would have been, you're stupid. A three-year-old boy's best girlfriend is his mother. And, you know, it doesn't need to be said. But the other point is, her mother was there on a mission, instead of being sensible and answering her question, she was obviously in a hurry from your description. So now my third point is, I'm going to remember to try to remember that what looks bad to me might look bad to somebody else for a quite different reason.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have thought of how it affected you. but in all cases, she was, you know, nice, but maybe a little short on the gray matter.
Well, I wouldn't say that, but all right. Thank you very much for all of your sharing. Now let us sing hymn number 100, I've Got Peace Like a River.
Thank you.
a mountain, I've got strength like a mountain. Got strength like a mountain in my soul. Got strength like a mountain, I've got strength like a mountain. Strength like a mountain in my soul. Love is not concerned with whom you pray or where you slept the night you ran away from home. Love is concerned that the beating of your heart should kill no one. So let us go in peace with these words by Alice Walker.